It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Build-to-rent housing developments are opening in some Wisconsin communities, most recently Sun Prairie, a suburb of Madison. These single-family homes are built for the purpose of renting. We explore the effects of this model on our housing market, and you can be part of this discussion. Call in with a question or comment, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Josh Walreich is co-founder of Heyday, a developer of build-to-rent properties in Wisconsin. The company is based in Illinois. Josh, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
Good morning. Earlier this month, Heyday opens its first development in Sun Prairie. Can you describe it for us?
Yeah, sure. So we are building 170 single-family homes in Sun Prairie. We're a little bit different entrant to the BTR category. So we're building attached single-family homes. So all of our homes are going to be in 4, 6, and 8-unit buildings. They're all single-story, no stairs. Universally designed, which means that our homes are accessible and livable to everyone, regardless of their ability or disability. And they're smaller than a typical BTR house. So ours are averaging about 1,325 square feet. The largest one we build is about 1,700 square feet. And the main differentiator for us is we have 50 amp NEMA 1450 outlets in every single unit. So that allows anyone who's got an electric car or is thinking of transitioning to an electric car to charge their car from zero to full overnight.
So BTR, built to rent, we're going to perhaps hear that as we go along here. But what amenities do you think that you have in this development in Sun Prairie make it more desirable for renters?
Yeah, so really for us, our amenities are the units themselves. As I mentioned, they're single story, which really makes them accessible to all different types of people. We also have attached two-car garages for every single unit. Every single unit's got a private patio and a private covered porch. And just in general, the house really does live and feel like a single-family home, which is definitely different to most of the most of the options out there in the rental space.
Looking at from your perspective, having spent over a decade overseeing development projects, now founding Heyday, why focus on the build-to-rent housing market? What attracts you to it?
So we really think that it's a niche product that is very popular to the two fastest growing demographics in the rental space. So that would be millennials that are thinking about entering home ownership and either can't quite yet afford a house or are choosing, renters by choice is a term you'll hear a lot, choosing to rent a home. And then second demographic would be empty nesters who have been in that home ownership space for a long time, and they are no longer wanting the maintenance and or the headache or the expense of home ownership. They're looking to move out of that and move into a lock and leave type of situation. So our product appeals to those two very fast growing demographics of the rental space.
And your company, based in Illinois, why build build-to-rent properties in Wisconsin?
Well, Wisconsin's just a great state. I went to school there. I've always been looking for a way to get back into doing business and spending time in Wisconsin. It's close to where we live, but mostly it's about the diversified economy. We have two projects, one in Madison right now, one in South Milwaukee. And there's just great job growth. It wasn't a area that had this explosion like much of the rental properties in the Sun Belt did in rent growth and explosion in supply. So we were first movers for this product type in the state, and we know it's a great product type, and we know that the diverse economy will allow for us to be successful there.
Josh Walreich, who is building a new build-to-rent community in Sun Prairie, one of the co-founders of Heyday. You can join in on this concept of housing. Call in with a question or comment, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. I wonder, Josh, who manages build-to-rent homes, and what do you see as beneficial here for developers?
Yeah, so we are professionally managed. Our management company is out of Illinois. They're called DMG, Daniel Management Group. They do a great job. The nice thing, in the build-to-rent space, or if you're looking to rent a single-family home, often it can be a mom-and-pop type situation, and there's a place in the market for that. But We are an institutional quality asset. We will be managed professionally by a large group that's available there. So if something happens in the house, you have a request for service, you simply go on to the online portal through which you can pay your rent or pretty much do anything you need to do there. And a maintenance tech will show up at your house and work to fix whatever's going on real quick.
These properties in Sun Prairie starting at $1,700 a month for a one-bedroom, one-bathroom unit. How do you set the cost of rent for your built-to-rent properties?
Well, that's always a challenge. We're really interested in developing affordable product, and it's a difficult thing to do in the inflationary environment. But one of the ways that we're able to bring much more affordable housing to the marketplace is by building smaller units. So, as I said earlier, our houses are 1,325 square feet there. I just looked this up the other day and was shocked. The average size of a single-family home in the United States in 1950 was 983 square feet, and that's ballooned to well over 2,000 square feet. So, by delivering a smaller unit, it's less expensive for us to build, and then we can charge a much more affordable rent.
We've seen how these built-to-rent properties are said to have lower tenant turnover and are designed to attract long-term renters. How do you do that? How do you design them for that?
I think it's just the nature of the product type. If you're going to be in the rental space, there's very few novel options out there. A typical multifamily building is going to be a two- or three-story product. You're going to have somebody living above you. You're going to have somebody living below you. And you're going to be parking in a surface parking lot, and you're going to be shoveling snow off your car that people in Wisconsin know all too well. So I think this product type with attached garages, without having anybody living above or below you, it feels like a home. And so by virtue of that, people don't want to leave, and they stay longer.
Let's bring on a call now. Jeremy is with us in Mineral Point. Jeremy, hi.
Hey, how y'all doing? Good morning. I got a quick question. I hear some of the background and information for aspirations for building this housing development sound like an idea to return home, to be immersed in community, tapping into a diverse pool for money and funds to support it. But my bigger question is, what are some of the seen, unseen, or unforeseen things that are associated with this development? I'm not hearing a lot of the humanity side, right? Like, how does this connect back to communities? How does this enrich the lives of peoples and human capital and capacity? I just want to hear some more about the human side of the development as opposed to the profit-driven element.
Jeremy, thank you. How does this development heyday connect to its community, Sun Prairie?
Well, I think it builds housing, right? And Sun Prairie is one of the fastest growing municipalities in all of Wisconsin. Over not only Wisconsin, but much of the United States, there is a massive demand for housing. There's a supply imbalance with supply and demand. So we are bringing housing units that we feel are affordable for a single family home. It's a different type of single family home, but it's affordable. And by bringing housing options to the community in general, I feel like we're really helping out that community. We also work with, we've worked really, really closely with all of the neighbors around our properties. We worked closely with the town to the north, which was Bristol, and the mayor and the city council of Sun Prairie, then all of the neighbors. So, we were entrenched into the community as we determined what we were going to build and made sure it was acceptable and something that the community wanted.
And you have a project underway in Oak Creek as well that you mentioned. What does success for the new properties look like to you? Where is this headed?
Yeah, so when we founded this company, we wanted to be long-term holders. We're not looking to sell either one of these properties anytime soon. So success for us is building it for what we told our investors that we would build it for. It would be filling it up with happy residents, continuing to maintain this and providing housing to both Sun Prairie community and Oak Creek community. We'll be there for a very long time and plan to be very involved in both communities.
Josh, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Josh Walreich is co-founder of Heyday. It's a developer of build-to-rent homes in Wisconsin. There is more conversation ahead on build-to-rent as we talk with researchers who examine this form of housing. And you can call in now with a question, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Entire neighborhoods of single-family homes are being built just for renting, and they are slated to open in several Wisconsin communities. We examine build-to-rent developments and the potential effects on our housing market. Be part of this discussion. Call in with a question, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. David Howard is CEO of the National Rental Home Council. David, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Kate, good morning. Thanks so much for having me on today.
Good morning. And Lori Goodman here as well, founder of the Housing Finance Policy Center at the Urban Institute. Lori, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on today.
Lori, let's start with you. You have a recent report looking at build-to-rent housing. How do other build-to-rent housing developments compare to what you see in Heyday in Sun Prairie?
Yeah, so I mean, I think build-to-rent is encompasses a variety of developments. I think, you know, some of them are the Sun Prairie model where you have connected units. Others are sort of very much single family units. Some developers have lots of amenities on the properties. Others, like Sun Prairie, believe that the home itself is the amenity. That is, some that have are amenity rich include, you know, pools and community centers and that sort of thing. And others, you know, the home itself with the backyard and outdoor space is itself the amenity. So there's a wide variety of build-to-rent communities. It's a relatively recent phenomena and a very positive one because it increases housing supply.
David, turning to you, your National Rental Home Council estimates more than 130,000 single-family homes built for renters constructed from 2019 to early part of this year. Why is this business model growing now?
And I think it has a lot to do with what your previous guest, Josh, talked about, which is there simply isn't enough housing in the United States. If you look at the numbers, there's a housing deficit nationwide of anywhere from 4 million homes on the low side to 6 million plus homes on the high side, if you look at the National Association of Realtors data. And that means there's a shortage of housing of all kinds, not just homes for people to buy, but also homes for people to rent. As a matter of fact, I would argue the supply challenges on the rental side of the market are probably as severe, if not more severe, than those that we're all familiar with in the for sale market. You know, obviously, that's partly a symptom of where interest rates have been over the past few years, historically low levels. That has provided an opportunity for many families and folks across the country to become homeowners. It's also partly a symptom, and this is related, of course, to what we all experienced during the COVID years, a desire on the part of a lot of families, frankly, for more space in the homes. And so, you know, for a lot of people, they were working from home, they were schooling their kids from home. It proved somewhat difficult for a lot of families to do that in a two-bedroom apartment or a one-bedroom apartment. And so a lot of what came out of COVID was a continuing drive for more space in your housing, space with a garage, as Josh talked about, space for storage, a front yard, a backyard, sidewalks. And what we saw was that really drove demand for build-to-rent housing in a way that we hadn't seen before. Build-to-rent housing is not new. It's really been around forever, but it had always existed as kind of a one-off new house here or an urban infill project there. What's new about build-to-rent over the past few years is the building of entire communities for rent.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we talk about build to rent, that's really what we're referring to, the building of entire communities, maybe 150 homes, 250 homes, all of which are built expressly for the purpose of rent, or a rental section within a larger master planned community, which is held for rent.
David Howard is there, CEO of the National Rental Home Council. We have Lori Goodman with us, founder of the Housing Finance Policy Center at the Urban Institute, as we look at this growing part of the housing market called build to rent. You can join in with your questions, comments, 800-642-1234. Kendall in Merrill now. Kendall, hi.
Hi there.
What is on your mind?
Well, I have a number of concerns. I'm wondering if consumers living there are not, if they don't own the home, then they're not vested in the community. I'm wondering if we're creating kind of slum communities. And also, home ownership is the often the ultimate mark of success in America. And the rents still seemed really high. And how does the consumer put aside for ultimately that goal of home ownership versus they're stuck in these rent to owns forever and never achieve that dream? So thanks for
Kendall,
addressing those issues.
Yes, Kendall, thank you. And Kendall, bringing up, you're not building home equity, Lori. Go ahead.
Yes, you're not building home equity, but there is a substantial portion of the population, about a third of the population, are renters. Many of these renters are unable to buy a home because they don't have the credit, they don't have the down pay, they don't have the necessary credit score, they don't have the necessary down payment, and for many of these renters, this is, they need, you know, as David mentioned, they need the space for their families, they need the space to work from home. So this is like by far the best option. There are some renters by choice where they could afford to buy, but they don't want to because they don't know how long they're going to be in the community. I agree, you know, for those that can afford to buy, where buying makes sense for their lifestyle, that is the better option. But again, it's not an either or. These are homes that that probably wouldn't exist were it not for the build to rent operator. What you're doing is you're giving people an additional option. And as to a sense of community, I mean, you're basically putting down, you're basically opening a community pretty much all at once, giving people an opportunity to make friends just as they would in that sense, it's sort of better for a sense of community than other rental housing would be because people are moving in at around the same time. And, you know, as Josh mentioned, you have a disproportionate number of young people that are just starting out who are building the credit to buy their home and who are and empty nesters who are trying to downsize. But, you know, I mean, a lot of it is young people who are trying to build the necessary credit. And yes, this is a little bit more expensive than other rental housing. It's newer. It's not, it's in many cases nicer. In most cases, it has more square feet. I mean, you know, 1,300 square feet, which is what Josh said his prototype was, is actually much larger than most, you know, apartments. So it gives people an alternative choice that's very important to them at this stage in their life.
David Howard, you know, looking at that issue of equity, I mean, when you have a home, you lock in your mortgage rate, you know, or, you know, it can be fixed and you have that predictable payment. How much can rents fluctuate if you don't have that type of benefit in the build to rent model?
Yeah, a couple of things there, Kate, and it's a very good question. And it's one that we field a lot. Frankly, I think most people assume there's a natural conflict between renting and owning. And for us, there really isn't. Our members, just by way of quick background, our members include owners, operators, and builders of single-family rental homes and single-family rental home communities all across the country. So again, this is an important issue for us. You know, I think Lori used a really important word here, which is options. What single-family rental housing and build-to-rent housing, which I view as a subset of single-family rental housing, what single-family rentals really do is provide an option within the housing ecosystem. Not everybody is ready to be a homeowner. Not everybody wants to be a homeowner. People need options in housing, like you need options with any other good or service in the economy. What we're seeing from data that we collect from our members is the desire for home ownership is as strong as it's ever been. What's different now, I think, from generations past is, again, not that folks don't want to be homeowners, but the path that they're taking to home ownership is a little bit different.
Mm.
People are getting married later. People are having children later. All of this kind of pushes out the time horizon for becoming a homeowner. People are paying off student debt. People are saving for a down payment. And while they're doing those things, they want the conveniences of amenities
of
and
renting.
Sense of
yes.
Community.
We're gonna pause there. David Howard with the National Rental Home Council. You can call in 800-642-1234. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A growing segment of the housing market is hitting Wisconsin with new single-family homes for rent in planned communities as several build-to-rent developments come online in our state. We dig into the potential effects with Urban Institute fellow Lori Goodman with its Housing Finance Policy Center and David Howard, CEO of the Trade Association, the National Rental Home Council. Let's bring in Katie now in South Milwaukee. Katie, what would you like to add?
Yeah, hi. Thanks for this important conversation. I'm a homeowner in South Milwaukee, and I own a single-family home, a 1950s ranch-style house, and bought that back in 2010, right after the recession. So we got really lucky with our single-family home, and I think we pay about $1,400 a month for our mortgage. So I'm just trying to compare the variation between building to rent versus building to own. And I'm wondering what the motivation to build at all, if it's not going to really create a more affordable option for young people coming up that, you know, might be willing to spend $1,700 on a 1,300 square foot property. But in the long run, they're not going to have that asset. And, you know, we realize now that Social Security might not be around for the next generation. That's a topic of discussion of great concern for young people today, including myself. And I wonder how the decisions being made aren't just simply being opportunistic in a short-term view rather than taking
fix.
A long-term view on what's... Yeah, it seems a short-term response to a shortage
to housing.
Oh,
gotcha.
And I'm wondering where...
Yes, Katie, thank you for that. Lori, go ahead, field the Katie's concerns there, if you would.
Okay, so Katie, you got really, really lucky in terms of your home purchase. You would not be able to replicate that situation today if you were a young couple trying to buy a home. Your mortgage rate would be high. Your home would be a lot more expensive. I mean, you got incredibly lucky with your purchase. Obviously, you know, home buying has advantages in terms of building equity, but again, you know, coming back to what I said, what David said, what Josh said, this is an additional option for people who can't buy a home, and it's a very important option because it makes their lives comfortable while they're saving to buy a home, or for many of them, they will never be able to buy a home. It's an additional option, and yes, you know, $1,700 is more than you would pay to rent a smaller two-bedroom apartment, but for many people, this is the lifestyle that they need right now. And then in terms of, you know, are you trading off short-term for long-term? These are houses that would not otherwise exist. One of the reasons why home prices are so high, why rents are so high, and why people are spending an increasing amount of their income on housing is the fact that there is a housing supply shortage. So what the housing supply shortage does is it pushes up both home prices and rents. By adding additional supply, even if it's not affordable supply, you're bringing down prices. That is, today's luxury units become tomorrow's middle class units, become the next generation's affordable housing. So adding supply of all kinds serves to bring down rents and make housing more affordable for all, even though, yes, you are not building affordable units. And in fact, it is extremely difficult to build affordable units because the numbers just don't work.
So you're saying that these developers who would likely be able to ask for higher rent as they're building new homes, that actually would bring down rent costs for existing rental housing around a new build-to-rent subdivision? I mean, I'm wondering, I would assume that if you put in these new units, that would elevate rent costs all around it.
Well, no, because you're adding more supply. So okay. If you have more supply, what that does over time is it decreases rents for everyone, or because rents are going up, what it does is it slows the rate of increases. I mean, one of the reasons why rents have got, you know, you sort of look at what's happened to rents during the pandemic and they just exploded. Why did they explode? Because people wanted more space. You had families who were doubling up who couldn't double up anymore. So what it did is it increased demand, and therefore therefore rents exploded. If you build more housing of all types, what it does is it takes some of the pressure off of rental increases. So maybe while home prices and rents don't decline, at least they go up much slower than they otherwise would in the absence of that additional supply. And obviously it's a longer term dynamic, but it's a very important dynamic.
Let's bring in Ashley in Madison. Ashley, hi.
Hi. I just had a comment about what David was saying earlier. I think that it is true that people are getting married later, having kids later, buying their houses later. But I think that ultimately we need to also talk about the fact that people don't have a choice in the matter any longer. People are forced to wait longer because we're not making the same money, and our money doesn't go as far as it did for our parents or our grandparents. In my friend group, I'm 37, I'm one of only two homeowners. And the reason is I bought my house in 2012, similar to caller Katie, and where I live, home prices have more than doubled, so I wouldn't have had that luxury now. As for what your current guest is talking about, I understand the supply and demand issue, but I also think we need to consider the effects of gentrification and putting in higher priced housing in an area where it's not always going to lower the price.
Ashley, thank you so much for that call. Ashley also bringing up inequities there, David, and, you know, issues of affordability. What would you say?
I would circle back to Lori's previous comments about housing supply. Again, there isn't enough housing in this country. There's a great report that's available on the internet that was produced by a group that we do some work with, Up for Growth. The website is upforgrowth.org. They have a report that actually measures the amount of undersupply in markets across the country. And so I scanned that before the show this morning for Wisconsin. And as I suspected, there are pretty significant deficits of housing in places like Milwaukee, Madison, some of the bigger markets in the state. But also on the list are places like Racine and Appleton and Sheboygan, markets that people might not think of as being undersupplied from a housing perspective. But these are markets that are undersupplied by thousands of units. And you know, really, it comes back to economics 101. When you don't have enough of something, the pricing tends to be higher. And that's exactly what's happening in the housing market. We need to build more units of housing, and we need to work with our policymakers to incentivize and encourage housing developers to increase that supply. That's really where we need to be focused, because until we do that, we're going to be confronted by these affordability challenges for the long term.
David Howard is CEO of the National Rental Home Council. We have Lori Lori Goodman with us, founder of the Housing Finance Policy Center at the Urban Institute, as we look at a growing part of the housing market called Build to Rent. You can join in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. You know, I want to also bring up the fact that these are specific communities with specific types of housing. And there's been that movement, Lori, of cities moving away from single family home zoning policies that really restrict you to only having like one type of house, you know, and no apartments or townhomes or duplexes. And so what effect does that with the build to rent model have on that movement away from single family zoning?
So I think the move away from single family zoning is absolutely critical for every municipality. You sort of look at the effect of single family zoning, and what it does is it drives up land costs considerably. And driving up land costs, yeah, it also means that you have lower density in an area. And what that does is it just drives up prices. So when you say, why is housing so affordable, so unaffordable, restrictive zoning is one of the main reasons for this. So in Build to Rent, most Build to Rent isn't in the middle of major cities. It's sort of on the out. It's sort of more suburban, more slightly exurban. You want to be within a certain distance of shopping and retail, but it's not in the middle of the cities. But again, sort of relaxing zoning rules, allowing for accessory dwelling units, allowing for multifamily properties, 2 units, 3 units, 4 units in formerly single family areas, that's just critical for expanding housing supply. Again, we got to figure out how to bring down costs, and using less land per home is one way to do it. And when you actually look at build to rent, homes that are built to rent versus homes that are built to own, what you find is they tend to be a little bit smaller, again, and it have a little bit less land, again, an attempt to hold down costs. Now, as was mentioned, that it's still not affordable for someone who doesn't make, a fair amount of income, but it is more affordable than that same home would be if it was built to own, because it is a little bit smaller, a few less amenities in the home itself, etc.
Let's go to Eric now in Milwaukee. Eric, what would you like to bring up?
Good morning. Thank you for this topic. Briefly, I've been involved in housing cooperatives for about 25 years, 5 in Madison, 19 in Milwaukee, and I'm involved in a project development that we'll have cooperative housing. One part of the land will be standard co-op, and then another part of the land will be co-housing. So that being said, we can make things more democratic, more affordable, if developers were incentivized to develop land and properties for cooperative residents. Whether it's single family or not, doesn't matter. You can have a plot of land. We have single family homes, but the land in and of itself is owned by, let's say, Moe and Curly or whomever. They own the property. Okay, they pay their rent. The mortgage is in the Three Stooges' name, if you will. Okay, but they have control over what gets repaired, when it gets repaired, how much to raise the rent, when to raise the rent, when will we be able to lower the rent. So I think the answer that is not discussed often
is the co-op model. Eric, Eric, thank you for bringing that perspective. David Howard, and Eric listing off a litany of things here that are different from build to rent. What is your perspective on that?
Yeah, so what I would say about that, Kate, is it sounds like Eric is doing fabulous work in Wisconsin, and it's important work, and it serves a need. It serves a market in a different way. Build-to-rent housing also serves a need. And that's what we've been talking about for the better part of the past 45 minutes or so. This is all about bringing more options to the housing market. You know, for years in this country, housing, and this is an oversimplification, but housing in this country was defined by you bought a house and you were a homeowner, or you rented a unit in an apartment building. And that was kind of it. There was sort of this gray middle area of other things, but that was basically it. And when those are the only two options, you're really limited in what you're able to do. You're really limited in the choices that you're able to make in terms of accommodating your financial needs and your lifestyle needs, not to mention being able to have a choice in where you want to live, which is a really important factor here as well. So again, you know, the housing market needs to accommodate all types of housing. And what Eric is doing is an essential part of meeting needs for a certain segment of housing consumers, in the same way Build for Rent is doing that for another set of housing consumers.
CEO of the National Rental Home Council, David Howard, is here. Lori Goodman, founder of the Urban Institute's Housing Finance Policy Center. You can add your voice to the conversation. Call in with a question or comment, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Housing developers build new single-family homes for rent, and several planned developments are slated for Wisconsin, most recently opening in Sun Prairie. Call in with a question, a comment, as we discuss housing, 800-642-1234. We have Lori Goodman with the Urban Institute's Housing Finance Policy Center, and David Howard here, who leads the National Rental Home Council. We heard from James, who sent along an email saying most people's most valuable asset is their home, not savings. And these rental projects all use tax increment financing, or TIF, as a subsidy for redevelopment. And the municipality, James says, gets no new property taxes until the TIF is paid back. The TIF is paid back with future property taxes, so there are no new funds to pay for the city services like fire, EMT, police, and schools. And James is wondering, Lori, can you respond to this financing piece for communities?
So not all these built-to-rent communities have subsidized financing, although some do. Again, it's a way to increase housing supply, and you get billed back over the long term as people are able to move to the community, as they're able to pay taxes, as they're able to go to restaurants and pay sales tax, they buy food in the local grocery stores. I mean, this is basically an investment in the future, and you're increasing housing supply. You're bringing more people into the community and providing desperately needed tax revenue over the long term. And I would also mention that in most of these build-to-rent communities, the developer is responsible for a lot of the infrastructure, building the infrastructure in the community itself. So again, there's sometimes a subsidy, sometimes not, but the developer bears a lot of the infrastructure costs in their community.
Would you like to add, David Howard, add on to how these developments are financed? I mean, because traditionally some residential developments, they're funded based on the number of properties being sold on, but this doesn't exist with build-to-rent.
Well, a lot of projects are actually built using traditional construction loans that developers obtain from either community banks, regional banks, or national banks. There's, in many cases, very little difference between how a build-to-rent developer will finance a project than how a traditional home builder who is building for sale homes will also finance a project. And Lori brings up a good point. You know, there are some build-to-rent projects that obtain public financing. There are many projects that don't, which is really no different from what we're seeing in the traditional home building market. I will say, new build-to-rent communities can be economic drivers because, first of all, they're bringing new housing supply to markets, which is desperately needed, and we've talked about that. But it's also bringing people who are committed to their communities. There's a certain sense that I noted in some of the callers, that families who find themselves in rental situations somehow are renters for life, or are entering kind of a renter for life. And that's really not the case. We know from data that we have from our members that the number one reason why a resident will leave a home that they rent is for home ownership. The number one reason. Again, we talked about the fact that the desire for home ownership is still there. There are more millennials who own a home today than there have ever been. More than half of millennials are homeowners today. That happened this year for the first time in history. So again, people are buying homes. People are becoming homeowners. The issue for us is how we get there. And, you know, in many ways, build to rent housing can be viewed as a rung on the ladder toward home ownership.
Let's go to John in Poplar with a question. John, hi.
Hello there. Thank you for taking my call. My question or comment is, with the current market the way it is, the old mobile home is kind of what this model could almost be compared to. But the difference would be, in a mobile home setting, you don't have that home ownership practice. For a lot of people in the beginning, they have no idea what it is to pay all the other bills and points with the actual home ownership. They don't know about the repairs. They don't know about the specific maintenance on windows or doors. And giving the rent to or build to rent model, it gives a lot of people that opportunity to get that feeling, that understanding, without having something that is a mobile home aspect, a stacked on top of each other box apartment, or something that is that model. I feel that the build to rent market actually is opening up opportunities for people to not only get a feel or a handle on that, but to actually open up enough of a market. It is a little more expensive, but it is cheaper than having just an apartment, nowhere to park outside, or a mobile home with nowhere to park outside, and the environment and I guess you could almost say the community can be surprisingly different in a build-to-rent environment, no different than a townhome.
John, thank you. Short on time here. Lori, I want you to be able to respond. Go ahead.
I think John said it very well. You know, build-to-rent provides an additional option. It's an additional rental option. So the you've got someone who makes the repairs for you, which doesn't happen if you're a homeowner. It's a lifestyle choice for many renters. It's a necessity for even more renters where they want the space, where they need the space, and an apartment doesn't make sense. So again, it's an additional option, as we've talked about. So thank you, John. Very well said.
Lori and David, thank you both for joining us.
Thanks very much for having us.
Thank you, Kay. Glad to participate.
Lori Goodman, founder of the Housing Finance Policy Center at the Urban Institute. David Howard, CEO of the National Rental Home Council. And earlier, we talked with the Wisconsin Build-to-Rent home developer, Josh Walreich. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.